Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface. Interface is a weekly examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture. And our host for Interface is the founder of the Stoa Foundation, Adam Ayers. Adam is also the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California. And joining the usual cast of characters here today is Tom Dunn. Tom is a musician and an actor here in Los Angeles. And also, we have in the studio with us Janelle Zazueta, who is part of the executive staff here at Media City Sound. And she was in a conversation with our engineer, Chris Holowaty, about the show, and somehow it came up, if you could ask a Christian minister anything, what would you ask him? And so she got locked in this room with us, and now she has her opportunity to ask anything that's on her mind. So with that, we're going to turn today's show over to Janelle Zazueta.
Well, thank you. I think the first question I came up with that most often haunts me, being somebody that was raised in a church where we were both Christians and Catholics, and we really didn't have a division on that. My first question would be, what would make a Christian believe that evolution is just not possible and that everything is based on faith?
Well, really what you have there are two different questions.
Okay.
One question is, why do some Christians exclude evolution, and why do they hold to creationism? And the other one, why is everything based on faith? So which one do you want first?
Evolution.
Evolution. Okay. There are many Christians who do exclude evolution. There are many Christians who hold that is a viable mode of creating. It's kind of like, say that you had a card house. I was going to build a card house, and I built a card house, one card every 15 seconds, right? That would be pretty creative of me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very creative sort of a situation. Now let's say that instead of building the card house myself, we'll say that I build a computer that has a mechanical arm that builds a card house, and it builds this card house one card every 30 days. Is that less or more creative? It's more creative. Now we'll say that I build the chip myself, I design a computer out of it, I write the program that works with a robot arm that not only builds a card house, but draws, prints, cuts, and assembles card decks, then reshuffles them, takes the cards, and puts one card in place every 25 years. When the card house is done, have I been more creative or less creative? So either way, you have the question of origins. One, in an ornate system of creation that would involve setting up physical laws which evolve DNA strands or whatever, and superintending those, writing the laws which write the process, that would be a more elaborate, more creative way of creating, and one which is fiat creation, which just says you speak it into existence and it is immediately, rather than you speak it into existence by speaking it over the course of eons of what we would consider time. There are different modes of Christianity, and a lot of Christians get very, very uptight about what's called inerrancy. In other words, they say the Bible must be literally true. And so they take the first, there's two accounts of creation in Genesis. They're right next to each other in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, and they kind of parallel each other. One is very structured, one is not very structured. They take the very structured one, which is kind of like a song, and they say, well, this song has day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, and so it had to be actual days. That doesn't take into account the fact that before you have planets and the sun and all these kinds of things, there can be no such thing as a day because there is no such thing as hours, which is no such thing as time, but they say there have to be 6 24-hour days. That is not a necessary belief in order to be a Christian, but some people get very, very, hold to that very, very strongly. And they think that questioning a 6-day creation is somehow questioning the existence of God,
mm-hmm.
rather than which way you view God as creator. You still have to deal with the problem of origins, that somebody sets up a program that builds rather than tears down.
Well, what about the dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs.
Where do they fit in?
Well, in very large boxes.
Do they
don't fit in very well.
Do they have a place in the Bible?
There's no mention of dinosaurs in the Bible.
Because I've come across, one or two Christians that don't believe in them. It's this totally yeah. made up thing, even though we have, you know, schools built on these sciences, but mm-hmm. yet they don't exist. So that's kind of an easy argument.
Well, a lot of Christians posit what they call the old earth theory, which says that basically if God were to make a tree, right now create a tree, it would probably have rings in it. They would say he created Adam and Eve appearing mature when they were brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so they put the dinosaurs in that. It's not like the – was that one, that movie about faking the Mars mission or the moon mission?
Capricorn 1.
Capricorn 1. So it's not that they believe that the dinosaur stuff is a hoax. They believe that it is there as evidence of age when it's not age. The problem with that view is that it says basically God can deceive people by making the earth look old, but he can't deceive people by making the Bible say it was 6 days. You know, so it's six and one half dozen the other. Either way, you have to say it looks old and God's playing somebody, some way, right?
Right, but the Bible's also a story that's just been passed from time to time, and it's kind of like telephone. Stories change. So how do you know? How can you believe everything that's in that book and not cause for any kind of interpretation and bring it up to today's standards?
Now you get to our second question.
Okay,
that's the second part of your question. How do you have everything by faith? And the idea of faith is a huge, huge issue. But it boils down to this. It's not really a question of if one will have faith, but what faith will one have?
How much of it?
Yeah. For example, do you believe logic is true?
Depending on who it's coming from.
See, we would say, like the dinosaur question. You ask the dinosaur question because of an idea that there are certain things that are reasonable, certain things that are not. And the things that are reasonable are true. Now, if you try to prove logic without using logic, what do you get? You get nothing. You know, you can't. You have to say, I believe in logic first, then I apply it. Okay? For example, you have to believe your senses. If you're going to do empirical science, you have to say, something is happening with my eyes. I am not hallucinating. I have a continuity of perception, and that this perception is valid, that tangible reality does exist, right? Even though you can dream dreams in your sleep at night
mm-hmm.
and believe that you are sensing sensorily and feel that it is real input, but it's not.
Sensorily, is that a real word?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, with your senses. So you have moments when you say, I have tangible sense input and it's real. And there are moments when I think I have tangible sense input, but I judge it not to be real. And I judge this by way of logic. And there are many, many aspects of this. I already believe these things. I believe that my senses are true. I believe that logic is true. I believe in the continuation of reality. I believe. But you can take acid and your world changes, you know? You drop acid, your world changes. Now, why is it that you say that the world actually has not changed? Well, I have certain laws that govern the way I think. You know, how is it that Tom didn't actually, you know, grow horns, turn purple, and fly into the ceiling? Although he may have. You put your faith in perception. Now, there are some things you can't see unless you already believe in them. Like the Capricorn 1 thing. We'll take the Capricorn 1 thing. Because some people actually believe it. My grandfather, I remember him telling me once, they can't land on the moon. It's just a reflection of the sun, you know? He was an uneducated man.
Once our world was flat.
Once our world was flat. Now, have any of us been in space and seen the world to be round?
I can only believe what others have told me.
There we go.
And what you see on TV.
What you see on TV.
But I choose to believe that.
Yeah, you see? So we do put our faith, well, mathematical equations and the horizon, but you're going, you didn't see that it was globular. It's not really the seeing is believing. It's that we believed it first. You believe in the viability of mathematics, then you apply them and you come up with your end. You believe that X-rays can't exist, then you set up situations in which to encounter them. And you really don't encounter them, you encounter effects. And looking at the effects, you say, I believe that these things exist, even though I haven't seen the things themselves, only because of the effects I see, say, on a piece of film. But you didn't see the X-ray, you saw the film. And you posit the X-ray because of what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with... there's a scripture in Hebrews that says, but without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So in the same way that you can't get to the end of a mathematics equation unless you believe in mathematics. Even though the answer may be valid, you have to believe in it first. You can't get to the end of a logic argument unless you believe in logic. You have to start with your belief and then apply it and come up with the end. So you have to believe in God first in order to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for example, like miraculous stuff. People say miracles can't exist. Why? Because they don't happen. Well, I think they do happen. They can't happen. Why? Because they never happen. Wait a minute. That's not very valid. If miracles do exist, then, well, we could observe them. Yes, but if they happened all the time, it's a physical law that we haven't explained yet. It's heads I win, tails you lose. You see how that works?
Mm-hmm.
So to exclude the supernatural, well, that can be explained by natural phenomena. How? We don't really know that yet, but it can be. that's not really fair. So you validate what you end up believing, or you validate what you have already believed.
And so, some of that probably changes depending on what your level of, I mean, because what do you think a miracle is? I mean, everybody has a different interpretation. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty miraculous that I woke up this morning and I was breathing and here I am today with the three of you who I didn't know this was going to happen. So I think that in itself is kind of miraculous. So maybe I'm just easy that way, but mm-hmm. that's the way I think.
Mm-hmm. Or like people say, where does God come from?
Everywhere.
Yeah. You say, well, where do physical laws come from? I believe in physical laws. They're eternal, enduring, self-ordered. They just are. Wait a minute. You're mad at me because I believe in God, who's enduring, eternal, self-ordering, and he just is. It's not fair to criticize the person who believes in God, mm-mm. especially when you've encountered him, and then hold to physical laws which have exactly the same liability of paucity.
Have you met God?
I believe I have, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
When?
He didn't look like George Burns.
Maybe that'll take you guys off somewhere where you
didn't
want to go.
That's a huge question. Now understand this.
To me is just a very bold statement. And I mean, I always figure one day I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
I think my first puppy's kicking it with him right now.
You have to understand, people ask me all the time, what does the voice of God sound like? And I could describe my mother's voice to you on the phone all day long, but not in a way that you could recognize it if you picked up the phone and you heard her. You'd still have to distinguish it. Even though I described it, even though I know my mother's voice, if I pick it up, I know immediately she goes, "Hi, honey." And I know I can imitate it, but it's not her, and you'd never be able to get it by my description. That's mm-hmm. just the fallacy of that's the frailty of trying to explain something. But I believe that probably the first time I ever met God, really encountered him, I was very, very young. And it was just in a simple prayer by my bedside. And I was very, very aware that God was there. It's like, mm-hmm. I can't really prove to you that I met you today.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, well, it was all in your mind. It was just a hallucination. You dropped acid on the way here, and Janelle is a Fig Newton of your imagination. And that's possible. You know, I have to say, well, I could be mistaken. There might not be reality. It might just be my perception. But at the same time, as much as I can say I have encountered anything, I can say I've encountered God, and his voice is consistent to me. I would say primarily the strongest time that I encountered God was when I committed my life to Christ on the steps of the Bellflower Library by myself, just sitting there. And I was caught with this paradox that I believed that there was a God, but I didn't live like it. And so if there was a God, I was wrong because I didn't live like it. If there wasn't a God, I was wrong because I believed that there was one. You know? So either way, I was wrong and something I had to give.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the conclusion that God was true and reaching out to him there. And he's met me there. And, oh gosh, I can't even say how many times in prayer, in communion, in worship. Tons, tons. And not like seeing visions, but just like, almost like, have you ever been somewhere and maybe somebody close to you is just in the room? They just walk in the room. You're busy doing something. All of a sudden you go.
Because you just know their presence is there.
You just know that they're there. And the Lord, sometimes he just drops his business card that way. And he goes, hi. Like, hi. Well, I was busy doing something else, but nice to meet you right now, you know? You got anything special? He says, yeah, I want to talk to you either about something good or something in my life or whatever. He'll just go, you know, I have been thinking, you have a really bad attitude right now. Or he'll go, hey, I just wanted to hang out. I just wanted you to spend time mm-hmm. with me. That's what I created you for. I'm like, wow, okay, cool. I distinctly remember one time when I could not sleep. I was living down Laguna Beach, and I could not sleep. And I was tossing and turning and stuff going, and I'm dialoguing with the Lord the whole time. Ah, blah, blah. And it was like somebody tapping on the back of my head going, go down the cove, go down the cove, because there's this cove nearby I always went to. And it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, fine. I finally get out of bed. I get my clothes on. I go down to the cove. brilliant moonlit night. I walk all the way down the beach and I go, okay. I remember sitting there going, okay, I'm here. What did you want? And as simple as anything, the voice of the Lord coming to me saying, I just thought maybe we could spend some time together. Is that okay? Like, oh, I'm such a weasel. I'm sorry. You know, just rude. I was just being rude. I'm like, oh, gosh. If you had a spouse and the spouse leaned over and said, I just wanted to spend some time. Is that okay? Like, oh, gosh. What? What do you want, honey? And I was like, oh, dear. So same sort of thing. But
and it was really you that was suffering the whole time. You just didn't know.
Oh, yeah. I was the one who was wacky. He's going, I just kind of thought we'd have a nice moonlit night on the beach. Is that, you know?
Yeah.
I made it for you.
For me, he comes to me like he's my conscience. And when I have something ticking, telling me I need to do something, it needs to happen, that's just him. Or when something's a little more difficult than it needs to be, it's his way of telling me, get it together, because I'm not letting you move on until you do this thing that you hate so much. Mm. That's what he's like for me. And I think the very first time that I remember really feeling like he was around, I was at the Kings River with some friends of mine, and we were going down the river in inner tubes, and somebody yelled there was a snag in the water, and all it was a big piece of wood. Well, I thought they said snake. So the whole time I'm trawling down the, you know, going down the river thinking, I'm going to get bitten by this snake. And I remember looking over my inner tube and I could see my reflection and there was just light coming around from everywhere all around me. And for whatever reason, I just knew that was him. Mm. And it was him telling me, you're going to be fine. It's not a big deal. And I kind of relaxed a little bit and went down the river. And he's kind of come to me in those circumstances just to let me know. And it was strange. And it was something I wasn't expecting, but it wasn't scary. And I appreciated it.
Yeah. I mean, he thought us up. He's like, thought up the sequence that is your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
If he thinks that up, he knows you. And so when he comes to you and he calls you, like Jesus said, he goes, nobody can come to me unless the Father calls him. When the Lord speaks your name, it resonates to the core of your being. And because of that, it feels natural, not weird.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And because it's so like,
even though it was something I hadn't experienced before,
yeah,
I knew it was fine and yeah, it was for me.
Yeah.
I had no problem explaining it to anybody else because I felt incredibly strong about that experience.
What did they say to you when you explained that to them? What was their reaction to you?
They thought I was a little nutty, you know, because they weren't expecting anything like that from me. That was something that was out of the ordinary for them. And, you know, oh, was he just some big thing of light? And I said, no, it was more feeling. But seeing rays of light look like they were coming out of my head. And I know it was the reflection of the sun on the water, but the sun never reflected like that before. So I knew what it was. And it was safe.
It's funny when you try to explain experiences that you've had of God to people, and it's the most natural thing in the world to you, and you are happy to tell it to someone, and their reaction is completely as if you've just said something in a foreign language to them. Like, I don't get it. I have no idea what you're talking about. I think you're kind of nuts. Whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the strangest thing, you know, because it's... when you've really experienced something like that, it's very natural and very, just comes right out. It's very, you know, buoyant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember explaining my experiences of God for the first time to my friends. And I just thought it was the most natural thing in the world and the most amazing thing, and that they would want to hear it and talk about it. And their negative reaction was the most surprising thing to me.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind.
It's weird, huh?
Yeah. I felt like, you know, it set up what was to be a pattern of feeling like an outsider when it came to talking to people about God stuff.
Well, it's a difficult subject because with certain company, you either feel like you have to believe what they believe in order to be a part of it.
Hmm.
You know, some religions, at least to me, have some very strict rules that I could never... And that's why God is in my life, and when I decide where he's going to be or when he just calls me and... He's with me all the time, and I talk to him. And like I said, he's kind of like my conscience, so he's always around. But I haven't walked into a church in a long time. And
why not?
I don't know. It was just telling the engineer how I was driving home last night on my way from Taco Bell. Haven't had it in a while, but had to do it. And and I realized—
You killed Taco Bell.
Yes, exactly. And I realized that there was a church within walking distance from my house. And I couldn't see the name fast enough as I was driving by to decide whether or not I could just, you know. But I could just walk over there and take a look. But so something's calling me to do that. But for me, it's just, I don't know, I feel like when you're Catholic or you're raised as a Catholic, you're supposed to go to confession. And when you don't, you have to walk into the priest and you have to basically apologize every time. You know, right away mm-hmm. you're apologizing for something, mm-hmm. which just irritates me to no end. Because I don't think that in order for me to get rid of my sins, I don't think it's anybody else's job. It's my conversation with him, and he knows what I did all day long anyway, and I'm my own guilty conscience, so it doesn't matter. So for me, it's always really difficult to go in there and tell somebody all these horrible things I did. And my brother was actually just being confirmed a couple of years ago in our church, and I was supposed to be his, I don't know the exact word, but I was like his supporter, you know, the mm-hmm. person that, and when the day came, I could not go into the church. I couldn't be a part of it. I had to have my mother step in for me. It was really emotional. I was just instantly in tears. I couldn't do it. I don't know if I just felt that I wasn't worthy, or it just wasn't, I just didn't think it wasn't something that I felt that I couldn't be that person to say to him, I'm going to support you and give you the best logic as far as God, because I don't think that I didn't think that I had it in within myself first, and so I couldn't be his mentor, his person that he, his sponsor, the mm-hmm. person that he would come to. But it was really, really difficult. So that's why God's in my own house and in me, but I don't know what it is. That's difficult for me.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think, at least I know for me, and one of the things that Jesus talked about a lot too, there's a weird thing. Every time you're around your parents, you become a child again. And that's a funny feeling. And when we think about God who is master beyond us, rather than a manageable God, we really kind of like to manage God. And I think it's a basic human thing that we like to control our relationships. We want our spouses to be manageable to us. We want our kids to be manageable. We want the people around us to be manageable. We want to be able to order our environments. And then when we encounter God, especially God in his authority, he's unmanageable. And we become a child again. It's like, I don't know that I like this role. And that's the whole thing all the way back to Eden of, I want to become a god myself.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I want to know the difference between good and evil. I want to be able to order my existence. And Jesus said it in the phrase, we will not have this one to rule over us. And that's that basic human dilemma of, will I be a subservient subject being, or will I be a master? And then we take on mastery of our own lives, and we end up panicked, anxious, burdened, and lonely. You know, and he's going, you really weren't made to be gods. You were made to be human beings. You know, quite frankly, you were made to be a naked gardener. But, you know, that's about what you're made to be. And anything else than that is really too much of a burden to bear. And so there is that tension, because we walk into a church, or we walk in, even a dialogue about God and a dialogue about a Savior, Jesus the Savior. We're like, saved from what? Well, basically saved from you, Harvey. I'm like, yeah, it makes me feel dumb. It makes me feel ashamed. It makes me feel like a little kid again. And I don't want to be a little kid again. And yet at the same time, I know I bruised my soul out there. I bruised it bad. And I need somebody's arms to run into, you know? And he says, well, I can't guess it better if you stay outside, ashamed that you were playing with matches and you set your clothes on fire. I can't guess it better if you stay out there because you're ashamed that you hurt yourself. Now, come on in here. And I think, I know that's what I experience even as a minister. Like every Sunday, I get ready to go preach. And beforehand, I'm going, oh, Lord, you know my week. You know all the ways that I bruised myself this week. And if you don't do something special here, this is going to be a real fiasco. So, Lord, meet me as my Savior. Meet these people as their Savior. I'm humiliated to even have to talk about this. So, Lord, just, I mean, meet me. Be my dad. And I think that's the thing that we miss, that this is really, it's really good news. That God does love us, but that shame thing, it's fig leaves. It's still like putting on fig leaves and hiding. So, you know, thanks much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
That's cool. Do you have more questions?
Well, we were out of time. But
we're out of time.
Next time.
Okay, cool.
Some other time.
Some other time. Will you come back in? We'll talk more?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
You'll allow
Thanks.
Me to waste your half an hour once again.
It's awesome. Great. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Cool.
We've just spent a half an hour with Janelle Zazueta, who is part of the executive staff here at Media City Sound, in dialogue with Adam Ayers, and occasional grunts and nods from Tom Dunn and myself, Brad Johnson. We'd like to thank Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible. Thanks to Chris Holowaty, our engineer, for his hard, slaving, grueling effort in the control room. And thanks to you for listening.